When Butch told the story about the 20-acre farm worth $400,000 worth of prime lettuce that went unharvested because there was no one to harvest it, we just had to ask, where have all the farm workers gone?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1019th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Portofino who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
Pleasure to be here, Michael.
Folks, our numbers have become most confusing. We are a nation $20 trillion in debt with maybe another $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. 93 million of us, working age adults, have left the workplace, gone. We're no longer there, which is darn near like one-third of our population. And tens of millions of more working age adults are pouring into the country from across the borders. Given how much money we owe and how many people are without employment and how many new working age adults we have milling about, it would seem like there would be a lot of willing hands to help in the harvest. But they are not. While participating in a recent Silicon Valley Ag Tech Summit, I decided to sit in on an adjacent farmers talk session featuring, among others, Steinbeck Country farmers Chili Bob Martin and Butch Lindley. Sounds like a farmer gripe session, I thought, and what could possibly be more fun than farmers griping together? Sure enough, the session opened with a group discussion of the obstacles farmers must overcome to grow and process the food we eat. But of all the obstacles held up, one stood above all else, as related by Butch Lindley. "Can't say as I've ever seen anything like it," he said. "A 20-acre ranch of prime lettuce worth about $400,000 going unharvested because there was just nobody to harvest it." In fact, many farmers are reporting their worst labor shortage ever. Even the conservative Western Growers Association is reporting a 20% drop in farm labor. That so much money is owed, that so many people have no work, that so many workers are needed, all lead us to ask, where have all the farm workers gone? Well, here to help us dig around and find an answer, we have a couple of the nation's best people to tell us, I'm sure. We have Butch Lindley and Chili Bob Martin. Butch, let's start with you. You're the proprietor of J&L Farms and Coastal Wines. Welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much, Michael. Nice to be here.
Good to have you aboard. Let's see, you're here. I'll pick you up a little bit. Now, I have a big trick question for you, Butch. Are you a farmer or a grower?
Well, I usually get tricked pretty easily, so I'm going to say that I'm a farmer.
A farmer. Good enough. Tell us a little bit about J&L Farms and Coastal Wines and Butch Lindley.
Yeah, J&L Farms is a farm management company growing now primarily wine grapes in Monterey County. At one time, we farmed throughout the San Joaquin Valley, Modesto mainly, and up in the Napa Valley, as well as here in Monterey County. And at one point farmed almost 8,000 acres of grapes. And prior to that, we were vegetable farmers here also in the Salinas Valley. And I call myself a newcomer to the Salinas Valley. I came here in 1970 after a quick tour of Vietnam and finishing college at Cal Poly Pomona with an agriculture degree.
Wow. So you're a genuine California farmer then.
Born in Arizona, spent 20 years in Blythe, California, right on the border.
Mm-hmm.
I'm headed there tonight. It was 115 yesterday. I don't want to miss it.
Get in on the warm. Good to go. Well, I always ask my guests, who pays your way? How do you make your living? Who pays the way, Butch?
Well, we grow wine grapes for other companies as well as our own, and And I suppose we look primarily to wineries to purchase our products and, of course, turn those into top quality wines that hopefully lots of people get to enjoy, and therefore they're willing to pay us good prices for those grapes.
So you actually produce something that people want.
Yes, sir. That's important.
That's important these days. Also with us, Chili Bob Martin, who is with Rio Farms. Bob, welcome aboard.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Michael and Butch.
So pleased to have you aboard. Now, first of all, Chili Bob. How did Chili Bob get the name Chili?
Well, a couple of reasons, Michael. We used to grow lots and lots of green chilies and jalapenos for the salsa makers in New Mexico and Texas. And then I cook a lot of chili beans, and so for different fundraisers and stuff, usually 100, 150 pounds at a time of dry beans.
Wow. So you came across, it's a well-earned moniker, Chili Bob, then.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, Chili Bob, are you a farmer or a grower?
I would call myself a grower, and I don't know why. I don't think there's a difference between the two, to be honest with you. But we grow, you know, vegetables, all your salad vegetables, and on about 6,000 acres here in the King City area, with Real Farms and Gill Ranches, and wide variety.
6,000 acres?
Yes. Well, a little bit less than that right now because of the drought. We've had to forego about 600-700 acres right now because it's the river is too low and there's no water.
No water.
So we had, yeah.
Well, we ask you the same question, Chili Bob. Who pays your way?
Well, I'm just a working stiff here. I've been here with this company for 35 years now, and looking forward to retirement in about a year and a half. But I get a weekly check, and hopefully I keep getting it until I retire.
So you get a check, because you make things that people want and you sell it to them, right?
Oh, yes, yes. Like I said, we grow all your salad vegetables and a lot of onions, all the lettuces and broccoli, cauliflower, celery, cabbage, parsley, cilantro, carrots. I mean, it just goes on and on, and all the different lettuces. Yeah.
Okay, let's start with Butch's story. When I was sitting in on your Farmers Speak seminar at the Silicon Valley Ag Tech, I was really captivated by all of the obstacles that you must overcome to be able to grow and process food so that those of us out here in city land could eat. But one of them was the fact that it's really getting hard to find farm labor. And Butch, would you again retell that story about the 20-acre parcel of lettuce that you saw?
Yeah, well, I probably should have said it was about 40 acres. But it's easy to do the math. If it's a good lettuce crop and you got a good market, hopefully you get in the neighborhood of 1,000 cartons per acre if it's going to the regular fresh market. And it could be a $20 market. So it's, at 1,000. So you get a lot of money pretty quickly involved. And there were crops that were at that time, that you heard Bob and I speak, that were having to walk by them. They didn't have enough people to harvest them. And of course there's a lot of other kind of work ahead of that, weeding, thinning, everything else, plus all the processing that goes on, not for head lettuce necessarily, but for a lot of the stuff that Bobby grows for Rio Farms and Gill Ranches that go into salad mixes in the bag and so forth. So there's a lot of people involved, and obviously you need all those people to be available for their job.
Well, sometimes we know that crops just aren't worth harvesting because the prices aren't there. That was not the case, though, huh?
No, that's true. And in that particular case, the grower was also a big company. They turned to other people and said, "Hey, we got this block of lettuce. You got somebody you can help harvest?" Or turn to others. And of course, all of the crops are competing with each other for labor. It's the time of year when there's lots of strawberries being harvested. There's some work going on in the wine grape business, but the produce thing's kicking wide open. And we see the little communities down the Salinas Valley, Tular, Gonzales, Soledad, Greenfield, and clear into King City, a reduction in the population.
A reduction in population?
Well, there's just not as many people on the street, not as many cars parked in the residential areas at night. And there's, you know, we could, back in probably 5-10 years ago, I could put out the word that I needed some workers, come on in and apply. The next morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, there'd be maybe 100 people lined up looking for work. Today, you'd be lucky to get 2 or 3 or 6 and you'd also be lucky if half of those, were tough enough to do the work.
So you really are seeing a disappearing labor force. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. It's the 1019th edition of the Food Chain. Today we're talking about what on earth is happening to our farm labor. Who's going to harvest the food that we eat? We have with us Chili Bob Martin with Rio Farms. We have Butch Lindley from JL Farms and Coastal Wines. And we have you. Please do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at metrofarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at metrofarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at metrofarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at metrofarm.com. That's metrofarm.com.
Well, if the farm workers aren't in town and aren't on the street and aren't ready to go to, what happened to them? Where did they go? That's the question on the table today. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host, with Chili Bob Martin and Butch Lindley. They are the ones who put the food on your table and have for many, many years. Gosh, how many onions have you grown, Chili Bob?
Well, we average about 1,400 to 1,500 acres a year down here for our processing plant in Oxnard. We process whole peeled and sliced and diced and slivered, you know, for food service and retail, but mostly industrial also. But we grow a lot of onions.
Wow. And Butch Lindley, how many jugs of wine have you produced?
More than Bobby could drink, certainly, and he can do a pretty good job. But we produce about 20,000 tons 1 year around the state, and a ton of grapes will give you about 150 net gallons of wine, so that adds up to a lot.
That's a lot. Yes, before we left on the last break, you were talking a little bit about people disappearing from the small cities of the Salinas Valley. Of course, we're talking Steinbeck country. And if ever there was anybody who defined the world of farmers and farm workers, it was John Steinbeck in The Grapes of Wrath, which I'd like to pick up in a minute. But Chili Bob, are you seeing the same thing Butch is seeing, that people are actually disappearing from the small towns of the Salinas Valley?
Oh yes, definitely, Michael. There's a wide variety of reasons of what's happening here, and I could go into that, like Butch says, you're just not seeing. I see people in town in King City. You know, I see a lot of people in town, but a lot of them aren't working, and I don't know. The only thing I can figure is, you know, talking to some of our crews that have been with us for a long time that are just quitting. A lot of them are getting tired, and they're not being replaced. They're collecting welfare. They're just happy getting their check, and they don't want to work. You see them on the street, and you ask them, what are you doing? Did you get another job? No, I'm just going to rest. I'm just going to take it easy. And they're getting their food stamps and welfare checks, and they're perfectly happy. So, I kind of blame our government for part of this by taking the incentive away to go to work, and they have done that in a big way.
Well, that's, I guess, where I want to go with this. First of all, I brought up the notion of Salinas Valley being Steinbeck country. And, of course, we're all familiar with the Grapes of Wrath and how in the Grapes of Wrath, you farmers were portrayed as the evil ones for having the temerity to give hungry people jobs.
Well, that's Butch.
Yeah.
He's the evil
one. Certainly wouldn't be Bobby. That'd be me.
That would be you. So, but in that, in the Grapes of Wrath, you really were portrayed as the evil ones.
Well, then there came the labor laws.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part, you know, it's the immigration is a subject for probably another day. We're not seeing the young people coming, you know, from south of our borders to come up here to work to hopefully find a little better life. I mean, I'm a little older than Bobby, but we had the Bracero program back in the day. I thought it really worked well. For our little farm down in the desert, and for various reasons.
Well, everybody who participated in agriculture at the time spoke highly of the Bracero program, and yet the government dumped it. Why?
Well, that's not the first mistake government's ever made. I used to be a county supervisor. I know of what I speak.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know why. I was a quote-unquote a kid back then, and I don't know why it was canceled out. I think the workers were happy with it. I didn't see anyone getting mistreated or anything else. We're working on another program. Certain organizations or farm entities have got H-2A workers up here. There's about 20,000 people trying to get permission from the Mexican/U.S. government to come up here. There's jobs waiting for them in the U.S. I mean, we're now in almost the 1st of July, and the soft fruits will start coming in soon. And assuming they've had enough water to grow them in the San Joaquin, they're going to have a tough time getting people. And there's just not enough people around willing to work. As Bobby said, there's whole myriad of reasons.
Okay, there's two things here. There are not enough people, and then there's not enough people willing to work. Let's take the issue of not enough people. It seems like there was time, at least during the Bracero program, where you would have labor contractors, where the labor contractors would assemble a group of people to do the work, and you as farmers or growers would contract with labor contractors, right? Are they still around?
Yes, there are many of them, but they just can't find the people. Bobby is more involved with labor contractors probably than we are, but they can't find the people. It used to be you call a contractor, say, I need 25 people tomorrow to do X. He'd say, okay, where do you want them? Now they just say, I don't think I can get you that many. And as crops become mature or need to be harvested, which is the most critical time, there're just not enough people around, and admittedly, it's hard work, Michael. It's not for the faint of heart. I mean, luckily the weather in the Salinas Valley, generally speaking, is pretty good. It's not 115 like where I'm going tonight, but you know it's fairly decent weather. But it is tough work. A lot of it stooping over, almost crawling around on the ground, if you will. A lot of We grow a lot of green peas here for the fresh market, and you know, and there's crews of 100 at one time, and it almost looks like they're having a race on their knees, and it's hard work. There's no doubt about it.
Well, having been a teenage herbicide myself, I know well of what you speak. I think I must have weeded about 40 million weeds up in the Yellowstone River Valley of Montana, but you know, technology changed a lot of that too. And I suspect that'll be a big part of your future. So there are simply nobody, no people, no farm workers out there for the contractors to assemble for you. But there used to be many of them. And yet we know that tens of millions of immigrants are streaming across our borders. And we know that 93 million Americans, working age Americans, have fallen out of the workforce. So you have all of those people who are doing something somewhere, but they're not working. Why is that?
Well, Michael, I can, yeah, I think if, you know, if you go back, and I remember when my dad, we sponsored a lot of workers to come across the border, okay? Mm-hmm. And we wrote letters, and they came, and they worked for about 8 months out of the year, and then they went back home for 4 months, and they came back every year. And they made really good money, you know, and they went back, and they actually bought property, and they did well in Mexico because they had the job in America. But that was the Bracero program. Plus, we had the labor camps, which were basically all male workers. And it was not a big issue. But as time went on, you know, those people cycled out and they had kids or whatever, you know, and the kids, that's our labor force right now. And they're phasing out. You take the evolution of a couple of situations, Michael. One of them is the improving economy in Mexico. I mean, a lot of our cars are assembled. A lot of our products are assembled in Mexico now. The components are built in European countries and China, and they send them to Mexico to assemble them, and then they're brought across our border. So the economy in Mexico has kept a lot of people there. The ones that are coming to try to work, there's, I don't know what percentage of those are streaming across the border, but, you know, if they're trying to do it legally through the H-2A program, that's another problem because the government's involved in it. I mean, there's a bunch of them still sitting on the border right now because of a computer glitch that, won't let them, get across.
There you go. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, what happened to all the farm workers? How are you going to eat if there's nobody to pick the food? Is it going to just sit there in the field and rot? This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Butch Lindley of J&L Farms, Bob Martin of Rio Farms, and you. If you'd like to participate, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, the numbers are getting pretty strange. We're a nation $20 trillion in debt. We have another $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. What's an unfunded liability? Let's say you have a job at McDonald's and you buy a new Gulfstream business jet for $30 million and you have no way of paying it. That's an unfunded liability. That's what it means. And we have about $100 trillion worth of those on the books. And we have 93 million people, citizens of the United States that are working age adults that are no longer in the workforce. They just dropped out. And we have millions and millions more working age adults streaming into the country from across the borders. And yet our agriculture cannot find anybody to work on the farms. The question is, why? And so I got to ask the boys, Butch Lindley and Bob Martin, aren't you paying enough?
We're very competitive in the industry. I mean, as far as everybody's pretty much on the same level. And you know what, Michael, we would love to pay these people twice as much as what we're paying them. But the marketplace just won't bear that.
Why not? Because we have to eat.
It's so competitive out there that the buyers are, and you look at the types of buyers we have now compared to what we used to have. I mean, you've got the Costco's and the Walmart's and all the big chains and everything they're trying to sell at a very cheap price. And so, but we're competing against each other to supply these people. But it's so competitive. We cannot ask for more money based on our growing costs. And they just won't accept it. So they've got us between a hard rock and a spot. A spot and a rock.
A rock and a hard place, right? Gotcha.
You bet.
What about you, Butch? Why don't you pay them $100 an hour?
Well, if you're willing to pay $99 a bottle for mediocre wine, we could probably figure out a way to do that. But I think the key thing, and I'm bordering on political incorrectness probably, and I'll take that chance, but, there's a lot of people, we've both said, I think, that people just aren't willing to do that work. There's other work they're not willing to do.
But with 93 million people out of the labor force, it seems like there must be a lot of things a lot of people aren't willing to do.
Well, and our society has decided that you don't have to work in order to survive. That's not the way I would run my society, but I'm not the king. Until our society says, if you can work, you need to work. We may help you a little bit, but we're not going to make you comfortable enough that you don't want to go to work. As I say, this is hard work. We're not talking about, sitting in an air-conditioned office somewhere. We're talking about hard physical labor and putting up with all the varying degrees of the climate, depending on where you are and what time of day. And a lot of work goes on at night around our valley. That's hard work. Now you add another factor. It's dark, and of course, got lots of lights. But it's just a matter that, as Bob touched on, between payments of all kinds from Washington, D.C. and from Sacramento and our counties, there's no major incentive for people some of our work is seasonal, and when the people go on unemployment, they're not eager to go find another job, as Bob mentioned.
And Michael, yeah. And you know what, to back up what Butch is saying, I mean, you take the situation like right now, what's going on in the Central Valley, San Joaquin Valley. There are thousands of workers out of jobs over there because of the drought. Hundreds of thousands of acres are not being farmed. Okay, so you've got all that workforce over there. Why aren't they coming over here? And go back to what I said. I mean, if with the government handouts and the president has given all this drought relief and everything, so why would people come to work over here in the Salinas Valley for these backbreaking jobs if they can just sit back there and collect maybe just a hair less from the government? Why would they want to work? And so, like I said, they're not creating the incentives for people to go back to work. And that's what my point in Silicon Valley was. I look at these machines we have in the fields, Mike, and when we are developing certain technology to remove stoop labor. And that is my biggest point, is getting rid of the stoop labor and harvest, pull the crop off the ground mechanically.
Before we go there, I want to ask you one further question. Here in California especially, we're especially proud of how clean we are. As a matter of fact, what we do here in California is that we chase away all the business that's dirty, and then we run down to the box store and buy made in China because it's cheap.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the prevailing ethic here in California. What impact are those rules and regulations having on your ability to hire people?
It's horrible. It is extremely difficult to do business in California. Calosha is sitting in the wings just waiting for a hot day so they can run around and to see somebody's shoulder poking out of one of these expensive shades that we had to make now for 100% of the workers to go in under the break, and so they can write you a $5,000 fine.
You're kidding, right?
Oh, no, I am not kidding. I mean, these people, when they write these fines, they're not allegations. You basically have no right to battle those fines that they're putting on you. You pretty much just pay them, because you can't go to court. There's no court that will touch these because the laws don't let them go to court. They go to a magistrate that is appointed by the governor for the.
So once somebody points a finger at you, you're dead.
Yeah, you're dead. And so lately we've been battling a situation for piece rate crews on their non-productive time, NPT, and which is breaks. We're supposed to be paying them, but we were paying them during the break periods at minimum wage, which was the law. But they may be making $15 or $20 an hour, cutting lettuce or celery, whatever. But now they're saying, well, we don't think that's right. We're going to go back 4 years, and we're going to make you pay these crews for the NPT at the daily rate that they made. The warm-up time in the morning, where they do their exercises, their break time, any training goes on out there, is all NPT, has to be paid at the same rate as what they made during the day. And they're making us go back, even though it was against their own laws that they told us we had to follow. they went back, no, we're going to go back 4 years, and you're going to go ahead and pay back all these people for all the time because we think we made a mistake.
And the big chains are going to pay you for that, right?
No. Sorry.
No.
Butch, let me ask you this. Before we're going to take a quick break here in a minute, but I have to ask both of you, why on earth are you still farming in California in the United States when so many other farmers have looked at the situation and thought, hell with it, I'm getting out of Dodge, and they have. And they've gone to Mexico, they go to contractors in China. Why are you two still trying to farm in the most impossible place on earth to farm?
The great state
of California. Do stay tuned, folks. We're going to take a quick break right back with Chili Bob Martin, Bruce Lindley, and yours truly, Michael Olson. The question on the table today is, where have all the farm workers gone? Where do you think they've gone? Why is nobody willing to walk out in the fields and harvest the crops? What on earth is going on? 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned. Right back. Well, I got a big question for Chili Bob Martin and Butch Lindley, the growers that put so much of your food and drink on the table for you to sustain your lives with, sustain our lives with. My goodness, thousands and thousands of acres over many, many years. I guess pretty much you gentlemen have seen everything, but I can't for the life of me figure out why you're still growing crops here in the United States of America when it would be so easy to grow crops somewhere else. Chili Bob, you want to start with that?
Well, I don't know if that'd be that easy to grow crops somewhere else. Easy regulatory wise.
Yep.
But you got to realize, and I think you've heard this before from me, Michael, that, there's only three microclimates in the world that are like the Salinas Valley. And one of them is the Santa Maria Valley, and I can't remember the other one. It's in the Mediterranean somewhere that has this Mediterranean climate that allows us to grow our specialty crops, all these vegetables, 9-10 months out of the year. And so it's hard to go anywhere else and take our soils and our climate with us. We just can't do it.
So they gotcha.
You gotcha, right?
They gotcha. Butch, you see any way out?
Well, Bob's got the right idea. He's going to retire and turn over to some young guy. And I'm not smart enough. I'm not smart enough to do anything else. So I got to keep farming for a while. But and Bobby's right. I mean, if it was possible, I'd pick up the vineyards that we have and I'd move them. In all honesty, probably to Arizona. But yeah, guess what? It's 115 degrees. We can't go. Grant cannot grow these premium wine grapes where we need warmth in the day and cool at night. And in those kind of climates, and you know, you can't put them up in the mountains because it's too cold, you know. So weather, water, and soil, that's all we need. Mm-hmm. And almost every crop, not just grapes, but and you know, you can't grow even as much as the seed business has produced different varieties, and we do grow a lot of crops in warmer weather than we used to here in our valley, as an example, as it gets warmer down toward King City. Used to not be any head lettuce down that way hardly at all, as I remember, but now there is at different times of the year. So but we can't replace our weather, can't replace our water. Mother Nature's replacing it for us with none, if you will. And you got to have the right kind of soil, and we can manipulate the soil to some degree. It's tough to manipulate the amount of water available, and we still haven't figured out how to do much about the weather.
So you're kind of like big fat turkeys walking down the road. What a great target you are for all the regulatory bureaucracies, because there's nothing you can do. You can't go away. You're stuck.
Well, and Bobby, particularly the vegetable guys, the leafy green folks, like Real Farms, have just been buried in food safety. I remember when food and safety weren't ever mentioned in the same article, much less the same sentence. And it's become a terrible expense for the growers. My nephew farms in Michigan. I told him years ago, I said, you better get ready, David, because this food safety and this leafy green thing is coming to Michigan. It'll never happen here. Well, guess what? They got the same dilemma there.
Well, it's interesting to note that the food safeties are in charge of the FDA's food safety program and bureaucracy. is former Monsanto Vice President Michael Taylor. So it would seem like if by establishing these rules and regulations, government really is going to control who they will allow to be our farmers.
I think they already are. Yeah.
I don't know, Michael, as far as I think, you know, we just have to comply. There's so many food safety rules that are basic. And that's
that you always complied with, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much. But I mean, we picked up the pace since the 2006 spinach outbreak, and the Leafy Greens Marketing Association has done a fantastic job of laying down some metrics that pretty much if you want to sell these leafy green products, you're going to have to adhere to a certain standard, and the FDA. For the Food Safety Modernization Act has looked at a lot of ours, and they're basically imaging those or copying those for that act that's going to be coming out soon.
So you have this incredible bureaucracy governing over you. You have a situation where it's terribly hard to find somebody to harvest your crops. How are you going to survive? How are you going to grow crops so that we can eat?
Well, Butch has pretty much... You know, for the most part, they do mechanical harvesting of their grapes, and a lot of it's the pruning is done initially with machines and then follow up with labor sometimes. I don't know if Butch can answer that, but as far as we're concerned, like I was trying to tell you earlier, Michael, it's going to be getting rid of the stoop labor. We don't have a problem getting people to work on moving platforms in the field. It's the stoop labor that we're having a hard time getting people. Nobody wants to do it, and I don't blame them. So I look at the technology we have nowadays with electric eye and density and visual technologies and robotics. There's no reason why we can't be harvesting or at least cutting these crops, getting them off the ground mechanically, putting them onto a moving platform, and let them be scrutinized by a crew that's in the shade, that's blocked from the wind, listening to music, talking to the person next door, having a good time. And there's no reason why we can't do that. And this is why I'm pushing for that with the people in Silicon Valley. How successful am I? Right now, not. Individual operations are having to design and build their own machines, which is probably the way it's going to end up being, because the specialty crops, you're not going to get the big food machinery corporations coming out and building machines for...
Well, you can actually see this happening in the berry country, because you see a lot more cane berries than strawberries now. Cane berries being mean you can walk through and harvest them. We're going to take a quick break, come back. We're going to talk with Rory, who is a pro as well, and you, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Chili Bob Martin of Real Farms and Butch Lindley of JL Farms. They are the folks that grow your food. Do stay tuned.
Yeah, Rory here. Am I on?
You're on.
Just a quick question for the guest. If right now in the strawberry field, decent production here in the middle of summer, pickers are making, you know, $150 bucks a day with decent volume. They're getting paid. Most of them are getting paid an hourly base wage with a per crate bonus, like five ten an hour, plus $1.10 a crate. So these guys can make some decent money every day. How do growers in different commodities pull people that are on welfare away from the easy, I just collect for existing money and do the work that's out there? And there's plenty of work to do, just like these gentlemen are saying.
Well, that seems to be one of the big contentions that Butch and Bob are making, is that why should people work when they're being paid not to work?
You know, and I didn't catch his name. I think you said Rory.
That's Rory, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, he's got a good point. But the strawberry industry is a unique industry in that they've pretty much, they're competitive. Yeah, I mean, you've got Driscoll's and California Giant and amongst others. But they work together with the Strawberry Commission, and they kind of help each other work out so they could make sure they could pay these people that kind of money and go ahead and and show a profit. They have to. They got tons of money invested in acres of strawberries. But in our, you know, we've got everything else. We've got about 25 different crops. And so it's hard for us to try to put together, and it's also against the law for us to set prices.
Uh-huh. Well, how does the berry industry do that then? Or cooperate?
Well, there really is no price setting, you know, other than, yeah, you know, word of mouth. I mean, people talk about what they're paying. You know, there's nothing illegal about that.
Right.
They've got to, like you said, they've got to make a profit or it won't work. But they incentivize the people with an hourly bonus. Some guys will go straight piece rate, but then sometimes you can lose control of the quality. So you got to be careful.
Well, let me ask the three of you really quickly. How are we going to survive with no labor in the fields, Butch?
Well, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and Bobby's right. I believe I've since he made that statement up in Silicon Valley, every day I'm driving up and down the Salinas Valley, harvesting going on day and night. And every time I see these crops, even on their hands and knees doing various things, I have to think there's a better way to do it.
A better way to do it.
Yeah.
Bob?
And that will, and a lot of that's going to include machinery and technology.
Yeah. Do you agree with that, Bob?
Exactly. Take the stoop labor out of it. And put those people that were doing the stoop labor up on platforms and let them and other people do the processing.
Rory, any quick ones? Yeah,
I agree with that. Also, we need welfare reform. There's too much fraud and it's too easy to just sit back and collect.
Okay, there it is, folks. Thank you all for tuning in. That was been fun with Chili Bob Martin from Rio Farms, with Butch Lindley from J&L Farms, and Rory dropping in from the berry industry. And you, I would appreciate all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thank you. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.